I will say a few things about the method. So first, and probably one of the most significant things we do in this work, is the idea of generating more choices. Because whenever you get engaged in some kind of system, people assume that there's a right way to do something. And now in Feldenkrais, you'll hear people say, well, there's no right way. That's not entirely true. Certainly, the right way to do something is a way that it doesn't hurt you or hurt someone else. But outside of that, the correct or right way to do something is very hard to say. It depends on many factors, and they're individual, so you can't make a rule about it in any way. So instead of teaching the right way to do something, we look to create more choices. And that's significant. Even when we learn something that we feel is better for us, feels more useful for us, maybe it gets rid of our pain even, we then adopt it if this is now the right way to do it. And that's a dangerous kind of trap. It's not that we wouldn't choose that way most of the time, but we need to remain open to other ideas always. So choice is one idea that we're exploring. The other, which is as significant, and exists in other domains as well, but it's not made as explicit in the other domains as it is in Feldenkrais, and that's the idea of evoking a more skeletal use of ourselves. In that the skeleton is the part of ourself that bears weight and transmits force. Now, we all know we have a skeleton, but actually in most of our cultures it's something that we shy away from. So the idea of having a skeleton in certain places has more religious connotations. But there aren't many instances when we want to meet our skeleton. It's hidden from us. If you see it, you should go to a doctor. Yeah? Maybe you see your teeth, that's as close as you get. Sometimes in training programs, we'll have a skeleton there. Sometimes someone will come in with a little child. And the child goes up to the skeleton and starts playing with it. And the mother freaks out. Don't touch that! And the child doesn't know why not. In a funny sense, it's sort of in the center of us. It's a deeper part of who we are. But as I said, we underutilize it. What we overutilize is our musculature. And a lot of what we do in Feldenkrais is a kind of gentle deconstruction of our muscular habits. The result is we become more skeletal. Now, that's just at a simple level. Because when we become more skeletal, when our muscles work less, our brain is actually freed up for other kinds of activity. It's a very different neurological event. People usually associate it with feeling calmer, without being sleepy, feeling more stable, and also feeling more mobile. So we'll see if some of these effects are some of the outcomes you find this weekend as well. So we're going to explore different aspects of self-image. The title of this workshop in English is called Uncommon Sensing. It's a play on words of the words common sense and, of course, the word uncommon. So common sense is something that we all have, hopefully, or to different degrees. And it's something that's rather ordinary common sense. You don't need a special education for it. Really, the education of common sense comes more out of experience. And I put the two words together, uncommon sensing, because I'm proposing that the way we explore ourselves this weekend in some ways is ordinary, in that it's available to all of us all of the time. But yet it's uncommon because it's not something we do all the time. Often we do it only when certain moments call us to pay attention in this way. It was common to all of us when we were younger. As children, we paid attention to ourselves this way all the time. And as we've become adults, slowly we've closed off aspects of ourselves in the effort to create a self-image. One way of looking at our self-image is that it's something we've narrowed towards. A child's self-image is much more mobile and open. One minute they're a fireman, next minute they're a nurse, next minute they want to be president, next minute they want to drive the bus. So there's quite a range of what they think about themselves. In fact, self-image for most of us, starts as a relationship to the world. It's a form of identity of how we want to be seen. And for many of us, it remains that way for most of our lives, that there's an external orientation to who I am. And this isn't necessarily a bad thing. If we didn't have others to provide feedback for us, I think we could easily be lost. The question is, though, do we look to others for confirmation of who we are? And if that's most important to us, then our self-image is compromised in some way. But then we're dependent on the approval of others for who we are. And as whatever development we go through in our lives, there seems to be a piece of this that still exists in all of us. The question is, which becomes stronger over time? My sense of internal authority or my expectation of how others may see me? I have three hopes for us this weekend. One is that hopefully I'll present some ideas that shift your thinking in some way, that you start to maybe question the world you live in a different way. And two, that in some way it influences your self-image, that you begin to view yourself differently. And three, that you come to like yourself just a little bit more. It seems to me that anyone who's in any endeavor to change their self-image does so that they can like themselves more, to be kinder to yourself. And maybe with that greater acceptance of yourself, you start to accept the people around you a little bit more, to tolerate their self-image. So how do we get to be kinder to ourselves? It's a big task. Honestly, it's a lifelong task. So by the end of the weekend, we won't be done. Probably we'll just have begun, but it'll be a good start.